Welcoming the opportunity to visit with a candidate for mayor of the city of Chelan, the incumbent mayor, Mike Cooney, is with us today. And first off, Mike, welcome.
Thanks, Dennis. Thanks for having me on.
Pleasure to do it. And you've had the opportunity, and we've even done it, I know, earlier when we submitted written questions to all the candidates to have a chance to introduce yourself. But rather than that, this time, I'd like to hear, Mike, maybe more importantly to those that are listening, is as a public servant, what does Mike Cooney stand for?
Well, I've always had service at my core. My past career, my past business was all service. Our current business, our coffee shop, is all about service. And public service is a little different than owning a private business. Public service is weighing the needs of your community, making sure that you keep a sound financial situation within the city, making sure that the employees are motivated and moving forward as far as to accomplish. Service is about working without calling attention to it. I always think about the saying that you get more accomplished when no one cares about who gets the credit. I think service is just at my core. I coached for 32 years, and that's like a lot of service there. We were raised to serve others, and that's just in my core, and I love doing it.
Mike, if you could define your leadership style and how that style best serves not only the residents, but also in working with an elected council, working with staff personnel, and working within the business community as well.
Well, my style, I would say, is something I learned early on. If you're going to lead, you're going to either lead by expectations or inspections. You're going to either expect people to rise up and accomplish things, or you're going to inspect their work. And I've always chosen the expectations. You set high expectations, you let people know what their goals and really what they should be working towards, and then you expect them to move forward, and you're there to help them and support, not inspecting. I've never enjoyed that. I've never I just don't see the value in inspecting people's work. You have to be trusting, and I am really proud of what we did as far as we've taken over. When I came in, we had a lot of people nearing retirement. We've brought on people that are quality people, that are younger and are going to work there for quite some time. It's a really good group within City Hall, at Public Works, at the Parks and Planning. Really happy to see kind of a transformation of the work staff there. The relationship with council, I don't think it's ever been better. I know that might not sound great, but to others, but for us, there's seven people that work together. We're friendly to each other, but we're not friends as far as we don't hang out. So my thing is really about listening, making sure that I have time for people, and making sure that I set expectations for the council. And I think if you were to go around and ask, which I don't want to put people in that position, but we have a very good thing going on right now for the city staff and the council members.
Thank you very much for that answer. I'm going to ask, really these are going to probably lead into a series of questions, but one of the things that came out of a recent candidates forum that was held at the Performing Arts Center at Chelan High School, a couple of key topics, one of them certainly being development. So let's start there. In terms of the pace of development for the city of Chelan, this is kind of an easy one. Would you say, Mike, it's about at the right pace, not enough, or too much?
I think it's perceived over development. But I'd ask people to look back, and we could go with people if they want more information. There have been no large-scale developments proposed and moved forward during my time, no large-scale housing developments. The ones that people are upset about, such things as the Lookout, Legacy Ridge, Lake Chelan, I don't know what they're called, but the suites over in Lakeside, that kind of a, it's a nice building. Some of these, you can't, I'm not critiquing each one of them as negative developments, but they were permitted and moved forward in the previous administration. For me, I'm trying to keep it as, I work as hard as I can to try to keep the small town. And when you say you're working hard to keep small town, that's not inviting or trying to bring the next development. I'm quoted two summers ago in the Wenatchee World on the cover of it as saying, if you have a large scale development, you can skip our town and move to the next town. Well, some of that's tongue in cheek, but some of it's also true as far as, if you really are true about keeping small town Chelan, you got to pick and choose. And through the comp plan, we did pick and choose where you can build out. And so I'm not anti-growth. I would like it to be a nice steady growth to see infill come in our downtown area first before it hits the hillsides. We're trying to preserve a couple hillsides so that not every single thing is scraped off and built upon.
Let's follow up on that if we can, Mike. Is there, I know you've got the comp plan in place, but is there a need perhaps for a more defined roadmap to development? Or are we kind of left in that position of you just react as a development comes along, whenever those might occur? The Lookout being an example of one that's already been done and is in the books. There are a number of projects I know pending on the books, so to speak. There's a rather large one with the Holiday Hills. Is there a way to kind of look at a broader spectrum of what might happen with development so you can react to one when it comes in at the time, putting that into perspective of overall, or does the comp plan take care of that?
I think the comp plan takes care of that very well. A really good example that you used is Holiday Hills. That has happened. There was an initial pre-app years ago for Holiday Hills, but now since the comp plan has come in, you cannot go as dense as developers wanted to. And I would also use the Lookout as an example. That took place before the comp plan in 2017 in a previous administration. This is a great example. It was single family, residential, larger lots, lodgy style looking homes when it was Granite Ridge. Granite Ridge goes away and now comes new developers from the Lookout. They kept just coming at the planning department in a steady stream to get it changed from that zoning to a PDD. And I'm trying to hold the line, no more PDDs, no more crowded streets, no more hillsides taken out like that. So I think the comp plan does, we planned really hard, we worked extremely hard at making sure we were visualizing what the next development will look like when we went through the comp plan and listening to people and seeing that they really don't want to see a whole bunch of, like if you had four lookouts up on the butte, I don't think that's what people are looking for. So people will say, well, you know, if they own the land, they can develop it the way it is. That's true, but the comp plan gave us the chance, the ability to shape what would be on there, on the hillsides. So does that make sense? If you own land, they say you have every right to do it. Yes, you do, as long as it fits the zoning. I'll add one more thing to that, Dennis. At every large pre-app meeting that's come in to Chelan since I've been mayor, I've been there, I've been in the process, and I've been asking the developers after they're finished presenting for some type of a give back to the community, whether it's a trail, a park, some type of beach access, something along the lines of, many communities enforce that by making it mandatory, and I'm more of a carrot versus the stick guy, so I'm asking them, and we're getting that. So we're getting, for the most part, we're getting people to saying, we'll build a trail, or we'll put X percentage of units into affordable units. So I think that's a good approach, and I would continue doing that if I'm mayor.
Is there enough protection in that comp plan when developments come up to cover topics such as soil contaminants, for example? We've had this come up a lot here in our valley, lots of agricultural land that now is wanting or is being turned into some sort of a development for housing or apartments or whatever it might be. And it's been brought up after the case, for example, that it's likely to be contaminants there, but when the initial application was filed, there was no notation of that
right.
being any kind of an issue. So does the comp plan give the public the kind of protection it needs for soil contaminants, ingress and egress, if it's in an area
yeah.
that there's not very good access, for green space, if it's a large-scale development? Are those components part of that comp plan, or does that really need to be taken piece by piece when it's up for consideration by the planning department and ultimately up to the city to act on?
Well, the planning department works on all of those issues that you're talking about on an ongoing basis. They work with the planning commission that tackles these items, such as short-term rentals or soil contamination or whatever. And each year, the city is allowed to update their comp plan once a year. And so I would ask people to get engaged in the planning process and make sure that you give us written notice or come to council meetings or whatever. And if you see something that's glaring that our comprehensive plan for 2017 has not addressed, then we should know about it. And each year the council can take in certain items and address and update the comprehensive plan. So there is flexibility there.
I want to ask you a couple of things again off of this, and basically under the category, if you will, of development. And one of the things would be about the process for notification. And I'm going to ask you first, within the city government itself, for example, if someone puts a plan forward, it goes to the Planning Commission. It may sit there for a while. It may be being reviewed by the Planning Commission and the Planning Department and whatnot. And all of a sudden, there's maybe a fairly large project that is pending. And there have been occurrences, at least that I'm aware of, where even those elected city council members haven't necessarily been made aware of a project of that significance, or let's say that size. Is there maybe an opportunity for better communication so that all elected council members are fully aware of that fairly early on in the process, as opposed to at the 11th hour?
Absolutely. It was, I think, my single largest source of frustration as a council member to all of a sudden see sticks going up, boards going up on the lookout. It was like, what the heck happened? We had Granite Ridge going down the road, and then all of a sudden we see a whole bunch of homes being built close. Very frustrating. So I'll answer that a couple ways, and here's how it works for council members. Yes, I think the answer is yes, and we just have to figure that one out as far as making people aware of Project A or Project C coming to town. The one thing that you, especially in a small town, you want to remove the council members from making decisions on certain or on any development on land use, because that becomes very political. If you have council members that are best friends with certain corporation that's building 300 homes, that becomes a political thing. So it's handled by the hearing examiners, and that's a fair process. But yes, and I keep thinking about how are we going to do this as far as, we don't want to have, we want to be transparent to the council and to the public. But also there is a process that whoever owns a property, they get to follow, which, by the way, since I become mayor, if you put in a permit application, we're looking for a 3-week window to get back to you and get it rolling as far as that goes. And that could be a town home, a single family home. Larger projects are going to take a little bit more time because you have public works and planning working on those. So I hope I answered your question. There's got to be a way. I know that I was frustrated. I know certain council members are. And certain council members would say, we trust the planning department to get it done right. And so there you go. Well, you could be spending a lot of time going down rabbit holes on proposed projects. So I would say once they're firmed up and the city administrator and the mayor and the planning director feels like this is going to be moving forward, there's a like a 80, 90% chance of it moving forward, there's got to be a way then to have that dialogue. So people are not stopped, as I was constantly at the post office saying, hey, I heard, you know, Legacy Ridge is coming in. I go, I don't even know what Legacy Ridge is. So anyway, that's just...
So something in between that and when you're seeing the buildings going up, as your example was at the lookout.
Yes, yes. That would be my goal. That'd be my goal in the next term, to make sure that if I'm fortunate enough to get reelected, to have it so that people are informed on projects that are firmed up.
All right, let's get off of that. Now we're going to move to another favorite topic of yours.
No, let's keep going.
Traffic.
Sure.
And
bridge.
I guess before we talk traffic, yes, we'll begin with the bridge. The one wing of the bridge, that process is complete, and I think it's pretty evident we're going to be living with that one wing of the bridge. We're not going to spend a lot of time talking about can it be flipped, but the reality is, with the renovation of the bridge, structurally, that needed to be done to keep it safe, the decision to make it a one-way situation, then there were obviously some very readily visible traffic impacts that almost as quick as you could snap your fingers occurred when that was complete. And I understand there have been some tweaks that have been done since that time. But feel free to comment on the necessity of having
sure.
it be one way.
Sure.
And then acknowledge where we're at with traffic and what might be done down the line to make it better.
All right. So I think Councilmember Allen said it very well a couple meetings ago when it came about infrastructure and getting projects done in our town, whether it was traffic mitigation, fixing intersections, fixing water sewer. This particular item had to do with irrigation over at the park system. I think she summed it up very well that this council has inherited and this mayor and city administrator have inherited years of deferral. A lot of things have been deferred for a long, long time. Deferring is easy. Making decisions as far as spending money wisely, doing things, thinking about 20 years from now, that's harder. So I will say that things, when I came into office, we saw a lot of things that had been deferred. The bridge was one of them. The bridge just kept on getting kicked down the road. And I think we've been through it. My opponent was in on the meetings just as I was in on the meetings when I was a council member and he was mayor. Then when I became mayor, I have a whole list of all the public meetings that were held. There was plenty of chance to say, heck no, keep it one way. I know that there were different, and I don't blame anybody except that it gets turned around on to me. And I'm proud of the way the bridge turned out. And I know people still have heartburn on it. But I will say that that bridge was in need of repair. It's safer. We kept the historic look. And when I hear about my opponent wanting to cantilever, there was a big discussion of cantilevering when he was mayor, two sidewalks on the outside. That would have done away with the historic look. We could say all day long, I thought it was a pretty cool idea in the beginning until I found that the historic look would go away. And I think that ranked really high with people. Okay, so as far as the bridge and causing it, I would ask everybody for one thing. Just most people forget, and we do have amnesia on things like this. But when the bridge was two-wayed in the summer of 17, and 16 and 15, those years we started seeing quite a few more people coming to our town and impacting traffic. So it was two-wayed, and I would look out the back here on Johnson Avenue, and traffic was all the way from Sanders to the front of City Hall. That was when it was two-way. So I hope that makes sense, because when it was two-way, we had a lot of traffic. Now, one way did exasperate the whole issue, and I get that, and I won't run from that, and I won't ever deny that. It did have an impact this past June and July, and then we made the tweaks 2 months late, my bad. But we did do it with the help of DOT, and we got traffic moving through. We got traffic moving through Johnson and Sanders, and then on Wooden and Sanders up going east. So that was the key where we got the light going. And I do
that was done by changing the length of the stop.
That's correct. DOT went out the next morning at 8 a.m. and we had been asking our consultant and we'd been asking DOT for some help on these intersections. So we also have money for long-term fixes, and other items have been brought up since then. So in front of the high school is one, Farnham and the highway is one coming out of South Chelan. Taking a look at Gibson Avenue, which most people kind of use as their route around town already. I think the neighborhood would become extremely upset with that. I'm not pushing one way or the other. What I am pushing is a global view of our traffic moving through town for the next 20, 30 years. One interesting thing is we had a meeting last Friday on traffic with six consultants visiting about traffic. And one of the things that they brought up was they have all the modeling, they have all the data, they have all the numbers from the counters that they've been doing over the past couple of years. The traffic has not reached the failing point where they were predicting by 2019 and 2020 that traffic intersections would be failing, two of them. The traffic has not reached that point yet, and in fact it's showing that it's going backwards and getting better grades. What I'm pretty good at is getting people in a room to say these are the key intersections and let's fix them, and that's what we were doing Friday. We were looking at total mapping. We spent 2 hours on it and watching the traffic patterns, where they stack up, and we were watching, you know, the outbound traffic in front of the high school. So people know about that. We did go to the state legislature and we did get $300,000, and I was able to get Chelan on the map for $300,000 with the Transportation Council for another $300,000 to fix the key intersections that we talked about earlier, Johnson Sanders and then Wooden and Sanders. So there are some pretty cool ideas that are being floated. And then on the outbound traffic, we don't have as specific of fixes. Like, I can't tell you there's going to be flashing beacons at this intersection
or roundabout, or whatever.
Right, but they know it. I mean, these are key spots that they're looking at, and it's on their radar to get answers.
Okay, let me ask you this then: if that were to come about, Mike, and there are going to be plans to maybe put in a caution light or a stoplight or a roundabout or whatever it might be to kind of help alleviate some of that pressure, what point will then the public be brought into the loop so they have the opportunity to say, man, that's a great idea, or, oh no, I can't believe
it. So maybe we learned through all the bridge where we didn't get discussion, we did not get this feedback. Well in advance of any shovel turning, there would be town hall, there'd be a special meeting over at City Hall, there would be consultant renderings. And I will put out one thing, is during the traffic meeting on Friday, I did ask the DOT to slow down the process, to put a halt to changing the lane configuration heading east on Wooden Avenue. I just said, let's absorb, we have enough things going on right now in our town, and they wanted to change the road diet. I've learned road diet means making them skinnier. And so it was being hatched pretty good. There was a presentation to the council, and there's a lot of council members, and maybe all of them, I don't know, for that. And I just said, let's kind of walk. Let's make sure that the bridge gets working and people find their way around town. It's much like the roundabout. Moved back 2-3 years ago, and the roundabout came in 2 years ago, and it was the talk of town. It was like the ruin of their traffic out to Manson. Like, we're slowing down. I think it would be really hard to take the roundabout out now. And not sure if people know it or not, but the roundabout was going to be yanked, and all that money that was put in the ground was going to be put on hold for years and years and years. And the remaining $4 million was going to go to Kashmir for the Kashmir Goodwin Avenue Bridge. And I said, no, we're going to fill that gap in. At 3:58 on a Friday afternoon, I remember us handing a check to DOT and saving the roundabout. No heroic thing, it's just background. And the roundabout now would be, as I said, hard to take out.
So again, I want to go back to your point then. Just recent conversation has now resulted in a slowdown on some of the DOT plans.
Correct.
On Wooden.
Right.
And does that mean then, Mike, that there will be the opportunity at some point, even though I know you're dealing with DOT here, it's not just city, but will there be that opportunity in the future for the public to be made aware of what,
that's why I
what
slowed
the plans
it down.
Will be and to comment?
That's why I slowed it down. It was just moving too fast, and it looked like it was going to be a done deal, and we wanted to make sure that there would be ample time for people to see and dissect and see how traffic would work or not work. And so just trying to learn from lessons and moving forward.
Because we're talking about this communication to the public and the opportunity for people to weigh in on things, is there a way in the future to make the decision-making process and the ramifications that might be facing the public more readily available through perhaps alternative methods, as perhaps the city getting engaged in more social media access, more polling of things, but I guess that outreach, are there ways maybe to make it even better?
It's a question that goes through my head just about daily, because council meetings, you cannot sit there and say, well, you have every right to come and talk at council meetings. No, you get about 3 minutes, and I found that to be very inadequate. So early on, when I got elected, we've held town hall meetings, and they're very well attended, and you get a lot of input. Sometimes you just get some kind of back and forth and public discussion, getting off the point as to why we're in the room. Yeah, I'm all ears. I am all ears as far as I keep thinking of, there's got to be some type of portal, like a city Facebook page or something along those lines. We're cautioned by that by our attorney that sets a record and then people go back and forth and things get ugly and all that. I think we can have some kind of vehicle that is civil and we hear people on a greater basis. I know my opponent says he uses a whiteboard in front of the post office, and good for him. I saw John Olson over there the other day, and I thought that was a really good thing that he was doing. But a whiteboard in front of the post office gets the people that have post office boxes. There's a lot of people I know that don't use post office boxes. So I'm trying to think of the way that you can get everybody, like, these are key issues that are coming up, and get engaged, and here are the avenues for you to get engaged. So don't have all those answers right now. I really don't, but I think about it, and I think we've got to get a better way. Kind of goes back to the whole thing about keeping council up to date on key projects. There's an answer there somewhere.
So those are all challenges, and I guess the thing would be that you do see there is perhaps a need in some segments of our population to maybe try some alternative ways to
absolutely
get the messaging out.
I'm going to an AWC meeting tonight of electeds, other mayors and council members and city administrators. I'm attending that tonight at Pybus Market, and that's one of the things I'm going to be looking for, is how they engage people. So I always try to learn from others, and we don't have nearly all the answers. So in today's world, you can't expect everybody to come to you with a thing, so you have to go to them. So I've got that in the back of my head as far as going out to, I don't know, whether it's a watering hole or a restaurant or a community center, senior center, wherever, and listening. So,
all right, real quickly, we're kind of winding down on time here. Housing, affordable housing.
Well, we can't go quickly through this.
Yeah, well, we're going to in this case. You're well underway in terms of the Community Land Trust in getting some affordable housing initiatives launched here in the city of Chelan. I'll let you address that first off, because I know that was the initial push. How's that going? Are you pleased with it?
Well, I'd ask you and everybody else and myself, 4 years ago, we couldn't even we could not even define the word affordable housing because it was getting in all. We have defined it and we are moving forward, and we're going to be breaking ground in spring on our very first homes. There's going to be 5 homes built in our downtown core that are going to, they're affordable price, and they're going to be for working families. And so we're actually coming up with, we have land that's coming forward being donated to the Housing Trust. So we're all very excited. We have a strong board. They're all unique, strong positions in our community that bring certain talents to it. So we're addressing the, we're addressing 60 to 100% average median income. So about $30,000 to $60,000 a year household income. And that's the considered the lower middle income people that are fleeing or leaving our town because they cannot work here and live here. So that's what we're addressing. And with the new land that's coming on board, we're hoping to come on and build more homes. It's going well. It's extremely exciting to see the first homes. We wanted to do one small project first and then move on to the next. They're going to be quality homes. They're going to be selling in the low 200,000, and they'll be made with good quality materials. The key is that the land is being donated, so you take the cost of the land out of a home. You know, Habitat for Humanity and Wenatchee Housing Authority, they address the lower income folks. So we're addressing this income spectrum, and I'm excited to see it happen. It's kind of, we had a big stigma thing to overcome, Dennis, as far as when you start talking about affordable homes, people would say, oh geez, I really don't want to donate to a charitable organization. That's not what we're doing at all. There's no charity here. We're just trying to keep people intact in our town. We're trying to allow them to stay here or move back to town and be able to buy a home.
Let's transition out of that from purchasing a home into perhaps the ability to rent a home. Not a lot of rentals in the Chelan community. Is there anything in the works, any planning going on right now to address the issue of the lack of perhaps apartment complexes, for example, for the people that don't want to buy a home? You have a lot of younger people, they're not ready to set down roots and maybe buy a home, or they're in that first job or something, and so a lot of these people that we hear about all the time that are traveling to nearby communities because they can't find a place here, and they're hooking up with 2 or 3 of their friends or whatever, and you know, they're combining households to try and find a place. Where are we in terms of looking at perhaps the rental pool and finding a way maybe to enlarge that?
So we have, the answer is yes, it's being addressed, and it's being addressed in a large way. We worked with Dean Widener, Widener Apartments. They're number 5 in the scope of things nationally as far as apartment building. They have 2 projects going in Wenatchee, and they have a 3rd one going in Wenatchee. They have one going in Leavenworth, and they will be coming to Chelan. They have planned 250-unit apartment complex on a piece of land, 10 acres up at Apple Blossom. There was a little bit of a hitch working with Widener Apartments, and I feel good. I think this is what I can bring to the office of mayor as far as getting Dean Widener sitting with the city and letting him understand that we're not going to lower our hookup fees from $14,000 to $1,000. And that was a hard discussion. It was hard to, well, then it was, sounded like they weren't going to come. But we found a creative solution that did not tap into the city money, and they are coming, and they will be building, and don't ask me when, because I don't know, but they will be coming, and that'll be 250 1, 2, and 3 bedroom market rate apartments. And I did ask Mr. Widener if he'd consider putting X percentage of affordable units being deed restricted, and if so, then they would qualify for lower hookup fee for that. So you can come in for, I don't know if you want to call it a subsidy or whatever, but we do have money set aside for if they are deed restricted and kept affordable, then the city has money set aside for homes or apartments. So.
Okay, well, you answered my question. It was going to be a question I had was if someone else came in, maybe with a smaller scale development and wanted to put up 20 apartments or 30 apartments, And so it sounds like there are some concessions that can be had on hookup costs depending on how they structure the rentals?
That's correct. If somebody comes forward, there are two different housing segments or sectors that you can put aside a subsidy or put aside money in your budget for offsetting hookup fees, and it's for deed-restricted affordable units or for senior living units. So those two and nobody else. I mean, you can't then, if somebody says, I have this new commercial thing that you guys really want, we're going to waive the hookup fees. You can't do that. So it has to be done fairly and legally, and so that's what's happening.
Well, I thank you very much for your time and answering all these questions, Mike, and want to give you the opportunity here if there's maybe any other, doesn't have to be a pressing issue that you feel is facing the city, but anything maybe we haven't touched on that you would like to comment on, and lastly to tell us why the residents of Chelan should be voting Mike Cooney.
Well, I would first off say thanks, Dennis, for the opportunity. You're always really diligent in your questions, and you're always there at every event. I do appreciate your reporting and given this opportunity. I think the one thing that goes through my head a lot is there's such a national feeling of taking our country back. There's Brexit. There's a whole bunch of things throughout the world and then throughout the states as far as towns taking their town back. And I've heard that around town about taking our town back. Well, the toothpaste is out of the tube right now. And we have to learn how to deal and work with what we have as far as more money coming over the hill, coming into our town. We have to work on making sure that we have a little bit more tolerance or acceptance. I was raised my parents had intolerance for intolerant people. And I thought I've always been raised that way. And I think accepting others, working with them. I will say, I brought this up the other night, in that I do think that we ought to have classes before the summer season to teach people how to cross crosswalks, drive in town, how to walk on sidewalks. It's tongue in cheek, but man, I'm with everybody else at times. You're kind of like, can we just move on? Can we get through town here? And I see it, I hear it, and I feel it. So. And then I also found out how you can tell if people are for you or against you. When you're crossing a crosswalk, if they slow down or they gun it. I think a valid question is, you said you weren't going to run, and why are you running? And it comes down to this. I'm turning 65 in December. I think that's too young to pack it in. And I think being mayor it keeps your brain going. I like the service aspect of it. If I didn't, I'd be gone. And I really enjoy working who I work with and why I do it. And I think I'm really accessible. Most people can find me at the coffee shop, or people can find me at City Hall. And one thing that I'm really proud of is that I feel like I've gotten back to just about every single person within 24 hours. So I'm a pretty accessible and responsive person as far as being mayor. So I want to keep it that way. Something in my DNA is I never focus on the activity of being mayor. It's the results that count. So when you ask me about traffic mitigation and all those are just activities right now. And we're looking for results, or housing. We're looking for results, not just activity, because we get caught up and we're doing all this and we feel like we're getting stuff done. No, the answer is no. Until you see results, nothing's done.
Incumbent Mayor Mike Cooney running for re-election, facing off against former Mayor Bob Getty in the November general election. Mayor Cooney, we thank you for your time.
Thanks, Dennis.